Welcome to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Michael Sullen. He's from 360 and writing his very first business book. What gave you the idea for this book, Michael?
Well, thank you for having me, Monique. The career I've had in human resources has spanned about 25 years, and I thought after all this time there must be something I can contribute, so I've been writing about some of the HR processes that don't work and how to make them easier for future generations.
And are there plenty of books on HR? Have you had to approach yours in a different way?
This is probably what's taking me the longest, is to be sure that I don't fall into the same traps as lots of authors, that it's not boring. I found that I was never reading HR books, so I wanted to be different, and that's probably contributed to the time it's taken.
And how long has it been? How long has it taken you so far?
Well, I tend to say it's taken me 25 years to write this book, but in reality it's taken about 3 years.
Okay. And are you close to the end?
Yes, I am. So the light's at the end of the tunnel.
So how did you approach it in the end? What was your light bulb moment that gave you the structure?
I think having enough people say, you need to get this published, this is interesting, this is a great idea, and being encouraged. I was a perfectionist writing it, and doing it over again, I probably wouldn't do it the same way.
So do you think that's a good tip for budding writers, that you actually write what you feel and leave it to an editor or a publishing professional to actually tidy up what needs tidying up, or to give you guidance rather than keep?
I think if you don't believe in what you're writing or you don't feel it's going to be good enough, you have to go through that process. Mm-hmm. You have to beat yourself up a little. At least I had to beat myself up a little bit to come to the realization that it's going to be good because it's what I think it should be. Whether or not anybody else thinks it is, that's another story.
And so what is the book actually about?
Well, the book is called Tagging for Talent, and it's related to the use of tags by peers to identify hidden talent.
So that's used on things like LinkedIn and Facebook and things like that?
Very similar. Mm-hmm. It's about finding key attributes or strengths in our colleagues.
So I'm not good at filing, so I wouldn't have filing as a tag next to my name.
Exactly. But you may be really good at something else.
I hope so. So the whole book is based on this concept?
It's about the concept, but I also try to introduce why it's not just about tags. It's about the amount of money companies spend on training, for example, to develop somebody's weaknesses is maybe lost money when there's a lot of strengths that are just hidden in the organization.
Okay, so getting companies to focus on perhaps developing or utilizing the strengths rather than just focusing on the weaknesses.
And now actually finding it, because a lot of companies would act on the strengths if they knew it existed. Who knows that it existed is not necessarily human resources. It's the people I work on projects with, the people I go to lunch with, the people I go on a business trip with. They discover that I do things that my boss wouldn't know.
Okay, so is that a failing right the way through that you take from CV stage, because you see a job advert and you match your CV to the job rather than necessarily putting all of your skills down where they might think, hey, you know, this guy could actually fit into a number of
absolutely businesses. And it's often we know these things when we interview somebody and then we forget about it, because 10 years later the person is doing something else, the person who interviewed them is not in the same job, the boss isn't in the same job. Meanwhile, we've lost all those things we interviewed for that they came with.
So when you started to write this book, did you start with a plan of which chapter was going to cover which, or which areas you actually had to cover?
No, I think as a first-time author, I had to go through a lot of self-analysis, let's say. I had to beat some people up while I was writing. I had to recognize people. And then I think as you go through it, you say, okay, that's just me. That's not anybody else. And then the plan changes as you go, because things are happening in the world and you discover and say, oh, I need to include that. I need to include, oh, don't forget that. Oh, that would be interesting to write about. And it's really about saying, okay, that's enough.
And stop there. You can always do a second edition.
Yeah, exactly. So
what have you learned along the way, not necessarily about the HR practices, but about yourself, about actually finally getting down to writing it? What did you learn?
It'll never be perfect. I learned that handwriting is not what I want to do. In fact, I can't write anymore physically. It's just I'm always on the computer. So I did a lot of recording and then had my thoughts transcribed.
Okay.
And then use that as a way to edit myself. I learned that you need to write every day. Somebody told me that in the beginning. I didn't listen. Just write for 1 hour a day at least. And I think I would do that again.
And you say writing, but some of it is actually recording.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I think you're the first person we've spoken to which actually has recorded themselves rather than...
Everyone who asks me, I say read it first. Read it first, because it'll come out in your own
language,
personality as well.
Okay. And so do you write at a particular time of day? Do you have any sort of routine that you follow to get your juices flowing?
No, I probably write better with a glass of wine. Probably shouldn't say that, but I think if it's an environment that's very comfortable and relaxed, I think that's really the message. I can't force myself to write.
Even though it's a business book, you didn't feel like you were working when you were doing it?
I did in the beginning. I did a lot of collecting of data. So I came at it as a business guy. First of all, I was collecting a lot of data, putting it everywhere, saying, I might need that statistic. At the end of the day, 3 years on, statistics change. You can only give some indication. And again, I was trying to come at it at a fun approach. So.
And what about lessons you learned about yourself while you were writing? Did you find you were more disciplined, more fussy, less fussy?
No, I think everything I learned, I knew. I knew I was a perfectionist, so that's the downfall. Those are things you need to develop.
Mm-hmm.
I think I learned I am funny.
I'm laughing.
I wanted this book to actually be something somebody wants to read. You know, I think that was really my big issue. So I think that's why I was picky too and perfectionist.
And so you found it quite amusing. You're hoping people will read it and smile, but learn at the same time.
Nobody wants to read a boring book. I don't care how serious you are. It's got to be. I want to be entertained.
So is it like paragraphs of text and exercises? How does it actually get laid out?
In the end, I came up with chapters that link to what's happening. So taggability, tagitude, tagutation, tagignition, things that you'll remember. If you don't read anything else, you'll at least remember what the concept is. So that was important. The other is coming up with some stories. And this is where friends helped me make the stories even funnier for non-HR people. And taking some of the examples of the real work life I had to be careful because HR is going to be someone who reads this and learns, but I don't want to turn off HR either.
Okay.
So I think I learned a little bit about how to do that.
And do you think the book, once it's finished, is only for HR people, or do you think people who are developing their career may want to read it, and, you know, CEOs, other department heads, that kind of person would also read it?
It's a really, really good question, and it's absolutely not just for HR. I find it's hard to convince HR to change paths. I hope there are a lot of HR people who read it. One thing I've said is if I knew when I was much younger what I was really good at, I would probably do a lot more of that than working on the things I was really bad at. CEOs, I know already, are the easiest to convince. If they could save money finding people they already have in the organization instead of recruiting and spending money on training them, I'm not saying we shouldn't train people, don't misunderstand me, then they are absolutely the audience.
So is it a book that you can go away and do exercises, or is it like little things you can practice at the coffee machine? Is it, how do you use the book as a reader?
It's one of the dilemmas I had in setting it up, because at first I wanted to have QR codes where you would scan a page and you would do an exercise. It got a bit complicated, and I should probably say that one of the delays was I was not a pro ebook self-publisher kind of author when I started. I think as a first-time author, I thought you weren't a real author if you didn't publish it on paper. So after about a year, I started sending out my manuscript to everybody, to all these publishers, started getting all the rejection letters, and felt really bad about it. Because I had all these interesting things inside of it. It was very new. And really what I found out later was a lot of publishers really don't do much but give you title, give you a publishing company under the name. You actually have to do all the promotion, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a roundabout way to say I started off with having these structures of exercises, but people will take away the book, and they may remember, like I said, these five titles that will help them inside the the workplace, let's say.
So you're obviously not Maltese.
No.
So, you're American?
Yes, I am, and French.
And French, so yes. You lived in France for many years,
yes,
as well.
Yes.
Has that helped when you've built the book? Because obviously all of those work cultures are completely different.
I've worked internationally for a long time, so I think that had a big impact. And I really wanted to, it's a good question in the sense of, just for really minute pieces of the book, do you use dollars? Do you use pounds? Do you use euro? Do you use rupees? And so I tried to integrate all of that. Do you use he? Do you use she? Do you use they? So I think it helped in the sense that I've lived overseas for a while and have worked in multicultural environments. On the other hand, my humor is obviously more towards my native culture, and that plays a big role in being picky, and when you have people read your book, giving you honest feedback is key.
But do you think that your target audience, the type of people that would generally read this book, are going to be the Americans, moreover?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I really don't know. When I talk to my Indian colleagues, they're very excited because they're very into social media. They want recognition. I would say across the board, everyone in the world wants some sort of recognition. People leave companies for lack of recognition. People stay with companies with less pay because they get recognition. So I think that's universal. So I don't know.
I often get frustrated because lots of my friends who have proper jobs, they say they have nothing to do all day, and they're in these jobs with nothing to do, and you think, wow, you've got so much to offer.
Oh,
or
yeah.
If your boss knew you had nothing to do, what would happen then? You know, could the company work on a 70% staff level? Or if they found out you have these talents, would
Absolutely.
They be more effective than, you know, they are today, and would the employees be more engaged? And
no, it's what I don't know is if in Malta this kind of concept works very well, given the size of the working population. I think we've found in universities where we have programs using this kind of concept, in a classroom, giving people feedback is also a place to do it. What I've heard if I just take Malta as an example, everybody knows everybody. So there's also that aspect. So that's a place where I haven't even thought about it yet.
Because in Malta, obviously, we have lots of international companies and bringing different practices, and HR managers and directors at levels that we may not have seen 20 years ago, in fact.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I think there could be a sort of an audience for you because you have lots of Scandinavians, Germans, etc. moving here that may have different expectations in the workforce than we're probably used to. But again, that's a different cultural aspect, the
Absolutely.
Maltese market in itself.
Absolutely.
And also Maltese going abroad to work, it might be useful for them to play up the strengths rather than play up the weaknesses. Do you think it was easier to write the business book, even though it took you a while, than perhaps writing a work of fiction?
Oh, for sure. Oh, I would rather read other people's fiction, which I haven't had time to do in a long time, but I think people who write fiction are super creative, imaginative, and it's not easy to, we may all have bits of imagination, but putting it in writing must be very, very difficult and take a real talent
to do that. So have you got another book up your sleeve now that you've written this one?
I do. Regarding corporate universities, but it'll be a much quicker book. It'll be much simpler. It'll be a lot easier to do, I think.
So the lessons you learned on this one were, obviously, they're not absolutely. Being a perfectionist, getting it out there faster.
I think everyone has a book in them. I know that's a real cliche, but it's getting it down and making it easy to see. I think I have a friend who, she's considering a book based on a very, really personal experience. Everyone else can see the book but her. So I think if people at least take the first step and start it, I think it's easy to publish today too.
Much easier to publish. We're actually, parts of the series show people how to self-publish, audiobook publish, etc., etc. And we're hoping to inspire people to write books and not think that your book just has to be a work of fiction. It can be a children's book, it can be a business book. There's going to be something that we all have. I read something recently that we have 100 people under our skin.
Oh,
so
right.
You have all of those influences, all of that input from these other people that we have to find a way to put down. So with your HR hat on, how would you motivate people to actually get down to writing their own books then?
That's a tough one, Monique.
Sorry. How would they play up to their skills? There you go.
Well, I think, well, you have to want to do it. I think some people are afraid to do it. Some people want to do it but don't have time. At the end of the day, you have to really want to do it and at least start somewhere. I used a lot of share software like Google Docs and things to share with colleagues that gave me input along the way. And that's part of the concept of what I write about anyway, is about how crowdsourcing is really key and crowdsourcing talent. So in writing the book, I tried to use also colleagues and friends to help input. Start there, maybe. To motivate people to do it is a self-motivation, I think. Some people do it because they want to be famous. Some people do it because they think they're going to make a lot of money. I have news for you. No one makes money on books. And some people do it just because they want to see it written down and not be lost. Do it for whatever reason you want to do it. And if nobody reads it, at least feel good yourself.
Frankly, you don't even have to actually publish it. You can just write it just to get it off your chest. Leave it in a drawer like people do. So whose work? You said you don't have much time to read, but you read a lot of business books?
I used to when I was young and motivated and and not enjoying the Maltese sun. I'd say there's several books. From the very first book my very first boss gave me, which was One Minute Manager, which I think is still around.
Absolutely. Yes.
I still think that's a great book for people to start with. I have a friend, Sumitra Dutta, who's now the dean of the School of Management at Cornell University, who published a book a few years ago called Throwing Sheep in the Boardroom. So just the name tells you it's about doing something completely different in the boardroom. And it was talking about social media and the impact. And that's been now a couple of years, but it had a big impact. And then my business partner, Olivier Zara, I admire him because he's written so many books that are very, very well received. And he has one out now called it's about practical management. It's about how to be real in management. So
did you learn anything from him when you were writing books? Has he given you tips?
He's given me a lot of kicks in the butt. he's been a good motivator because, and I think if I had listened to him earlier, I would be a lot more advanced. But, you know, you have to go through that process yourself. His tips have been just write, get it done, and people will enjoy it. And it's also obviously a good tool to work out your thoughts on what you're doing. So if nothing else, it's a working paper.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Michael Solomon, the author of Tagging for Talent. So can you tell us a bit more about your process, any things you would pass on to budding authors of whatever kind of book?
Well, I think you have to start with something. So start writing something, whether it's verbally or on paper or on your computer, and just write every day for a week. And if after a week you want to come back to it and keep going, then you'll find that maybe you really have something going. Some people will say don't let anybody read what you've written because they may discourage you. I think that's probably true in some cases, or they may say, yeah, but what if you do this? What if you do this? Just write for yourself for a while and see how that goes.
Okay.
I happen to have had a friend that I met way back in university who has a living as a copywriter. And on my annual visit back to the U.S., she and I had a cup of coffee one day and figured out that what she was doing was what I was looking at. And so she ended up being a copywriter for me.
What does that mean?
There's lots of different kinds is what I discovered. But she, for me, took my text and checked it for grammar, checked it for all of the I wouldn't say she was an editor, although she did some editing as well. But helped get across some of the messages and maybe rearrange a story as a set of another set of eyes.
Okay.
So I tell the story in the book about walking into the Apple store and having my phone fixed, and this 20-something kid says, "Sir, you have too many contacts on your phone," because I had maybe 2,000 contacts on my phone. I said, "Well, how many do you have?" And he says, 100. I can tell that story verbally, but to put it in writing took somebody with a lot more skill. So I had some help to make that more amusing and more appealing. She also helped me with through the other step is a really key one, at least in that phase for me, was sending letters to potential publishers.
Okay, how was that? 'Cause,
it was an interesting process, because here she's asking me to send a half-finished book to a publisher. There's no way, it has to be perfect. I have to send it now. You know, I have to send it when it's right, not when it's halfway done. And I think, again, one of the things you need to really listen to what people offer as advice. She was right in that I would have known quicker that whether they were interested or not. I wouldn't have waited to the end to know that nobody wants to publish another business book that's as unique, or that if you're not a five-time author or something. So that process was interesting, but also just the process of what do you write in your letter? You know, what's the book about? Well, you know, when you're starting off, the book will be about what you want it to be about. If the publisher is asking you to make a little tweak, we're all open to those things. But getting that information to the publishers is not very easy.
How did you actually go about finding publishers in the first place, or potential publishers in the first place?
Amazon.com.
Ah, okay.
Go to books that you would buy, books that yours are like, and see who's publishing them. And then looking up the publishers online, that's a whole process also, to see who accepts book proposals mm-hmm. with an agent or without an agent.
Okay.
Many will only accept one through an agent. So that was another process, is to find agents that'll take you. So there are agents that will represent you. And every time you add somebody, it takes away some of the income, let's mm-hmm. say. But also, you're stuck with all of the responsibility to promote.
Still.
As I understand. Yeah, exactly. And again, and maybe I was coming out with this book right at the cusp also, where online publishing was becoming more and more acceptable, let's say, in my area.
So you say acceptable. What do you, because there's this sort of snobbery around online publishing.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to admit, I would go to a university and have a book in my hands. To ask me to go online and download it is a whole other story. It's not about the technology. I'm not at all afraid of the technology, but it just didn't seem real. It doesn't seem like you're a real author. I know that's not true now. And when I speak at conferences, all my fellow speakers, they're giving out website or address, and people buy them, or they have 20 published, or publishing on demand, which is a new concept also.
So that's sort of printing literally as you go along, maybe 10, 20 books at a time.
Absolutely, or people can download it and have it printed and sent to them.
Cool.
Setting all that up now is a new process since I've gone that route, is you choose the kind of paper you want, how many colors you want, and all of that, and then the price you want. So you have to keep it at a price point that's interesting. Again, for me, it's never been about how much money I'm going to make, but you want it to be worth your time. So if I speak somewhere, or if I'm with a client, I would like them to be able to have it at a reasonable price. But more, I'm interested in the information getting distributed. And there, I think e-publishing helps distribution of the concepts be quicker.
Because you can use your networks, your LinkedIn, your Facebooks, to be able to distribute your book and be able to target people really easily, because otherwise you have to rely on them reading about your book in some publicity that they may have been able to garner.
For sure.
And walk into a shop to get it.
Absolutely true. And I think that's changed a lot.
And so the layout of an ebook, is that different?
Not really. Actually, the ebook allows you to be maybe even a little more creative. It has to be printable for me, because I do want to have some to distribute. But the look and feel can be more fun. You can include animation, you can include videos and things like that. And that's probably where I'm going now, is to, when we first talked about, are there are there games or tips inside the book? I want to make it something that people feel part of, and they can skip and then go to what's interesting.
I remember reading the Harry Potter books when they first came out, and them talking about actually what became e-books in the end, and it's quite funny to see it all happening now, where you have video on your page. It makes you feel like you saw into the future. And anything else for us?
Book cover apparently is a science unto itself. So if you think you can design your own book cover, be careful. I found a great little site called Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crowdsourced site, actually, so that's maybe an idea for someone. But book cover design is quite important. So I'm going through that process now as well.
Okay, so that's obviously different colors appeal, different fonts appeal, and now you're not on a bookshelf, you're on a,
exactly.
Amongst others on a virtual bookcase, you still need to be able to stand out.
Exactly.
So it's still quite important. Excellent.
I guess the number one thing I'd say is leave your ego at the door when it comes to e-books or physical books. The message is to get it out. Get it written, and then if it's that popular, and this is probably what changed my mind, was I was told by somebody that if your ebook becomes that popular, a publisher will pick it up. So that's maybe another way to look at it.
You can go to bed and sleep properly then, once
Absolutely.
You know you've got your bed on your bookside table. Excellent. So thank you very much. That's Michael Solon from 360, who's the author of Tagging for Talent, who's joining me on this week's What's the Story. Next week, I'll be talking to Lizzie Eldridge, who's the author of a number of books, and you'll hear from us next week, same time, same place. Thank you.